and we CMS just could start doing that.
What are they hiding? We have 20 seconds.
I have no idea what they're hiding. I think what they're hiding is a procurement system that's broken and needs to be fixed.
Clay Johnson, we want to thank you very much for being with us. Former member of President Barack Obama's technology team founded the company that built Obama's 2008 site. It's called Department of Better Technology. This is Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Matte, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Caron, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, Sharina Dadura, Mike DeFilippo, Nigel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, and Vesta Gudars. To our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Kirk-Meadows, Carla DeJesus. Go to our website at democracynow.org for transcripts, video, and audio podcasts. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
WHFR Dearborn!
Hi, everybody. This is Jay Koronik, and we're here with the new WHFR Journal. Boy, Jim Hightower really wants to get going today. We hear a little bit of his theme music sneaking in there, but it's going to be a great show. Today is October the 25th, 2013. And I do want to thank Dennis Reimars and John Zedikian and last week Susan McGraw for sitting in for me while I was taking a little vacation. And you guys had a lot of fun, right? Wait a minute. They can't hear you yet. Dennis, go.
Well, I'm going to say this as diplomatically as I can. We learned just how hard the job can be and how easy you make it look. So yeah. We appreciate what you do. And thank you for taking your break and thank you for being back.
Wow. Okay. Well, anyway, we're moving on because we've got some exciting stories to cover. Only about 10 days, 11 days maybe, before the big election. That's right. Almost everywhere in Michigan, there's a lot of local elections. And remember, what matters most is right next door. That means, you know, your voting in these local elections will decide pretty much the topics that are going to be hitting you in the face in the upcoming days of the election. So you need to make good choices. You need to get everybody you know to vote and make a good decision, too.
You know, there's no shortage of information out there either. Thankfully, there are so many opportunities to learn more about the issues as well as the candidates.
Yes, yes. And we're here with a special guest today, Diane Greene, who's going to talk about a chance to find out more information about non-traditional career choices, in this case, for women. HFCC has done that, once for women, once for men, pretty much every year for the last,
about 7 years.
7 years now, yeah.
And let me thank you for having me on again. Really appreciate this
problem.
Opportunity.
Diane
Love
is with
when you come
the,
on.
The counseling department and is in charge of this and has been in charge of many other programs, too. So, but people have a little time. Sometimes we just tell them about it like the week before. But this is November 13th, Wednesday. So if the election is 11 days away, then you add one more day, 12, and then 7 more. So about 19 days before this. But plan ahead, folks.
Yeah, mark your calendars.
That's right. That's right. So Wednesday, November 13th. And, again, this is sort of outreach to the counseling department and a chance for people to learn about career paths that they might not have been thinking about before. The example from years ago is that, like, anything math-related, well, that's not for women.
That's for guys.
Yeah,
but
just
not anymore.
Guys. No, not anymore. So tell us about the extent, the time, place of this event on November 13th, and then we'll get into we get a lot of good speakers. They'll be talking about these different areas that, in this case, women might want to consider for a career choice.
Absolutely, absolutely. We title our event, Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Careers for Women in Technology. And this is a Perkins-funded event. And we've been doing it now for, I think this is about our seventh year. In the fall, we present a session for women, and in the spring for men. We're scheduled to kick off on Wednesday, November 13th, in the Ghaffari Conference Room. That's in our technical building, room T123. We're going to actually start our registration at 7:30 in the morning with hot coffee and donuts and bagels. You know, so, and that's free, so you can come and have a little coffee and mingle prior to the program kicking off at 8 a.m. And we're highlighting and focusing on our energy technology, criminal justice, manufacturing productivity systems, that's CNN, computer numerical controlled programming, hospitality, we're going to have architectural construction, computer information systems, and our industrial drafting and CAD programs. Chad Austin's coming in, and he's going to talk to folks about what kinds of things happen in the career services area. That's a new title change for the office. It had been job placement, but that brings it more in line with what other sister two-year and four-year institutions title their areas.
I want to ask you, did they move that particular...
Yes, they're next-door neighbors to counseling.
Yeah, I just saw that when we came in to see you. Wow. Okay.
Yes, so Chad's going to come in, and he's going to talk about what's going on in his area. As a matter of fact, he just did a huge career fair. I understand there were... approximately 500 people.
It was
there.
Incredible.
Last week, Friday, yeah.
And he kept bringing in people here for us to interview. It was wonderful.
Yeah. So, you know, he's going to be there. He's going to talk about what's going on in his shop. And Dr. Brenda Hildreth, who is actually co-chairing the event with me this year, is going to talk about her area and what kind of money sources are available to further assist students in covering the cost of education. So now we've got a great day planned.
It should be made clear at the outset, this is for any women, whether they're current students here at HFCC or not, right?
Absolutely.
And it's completely free, the non-traditional careers workshop, and November 13th. Could you explain a little bit, because from registration beginning at 7:30 in the morning, I assume they get started around 8 o'clock or so?
Yes, we kick off.
So it's about 5 hours. So yeah. How are you going to have that going? Is it concurrent sessions, or everybody gets to hear everything?
Everybody gets to hear everything.
Oh, that's good.
And we will have some demonstrations where we'll be taking the groups to certain ones of the labs. Other individuals will be coming in, lead faculty. We plan on having some students, current students, graduates, talk about their experiences being a woman in a male-dominated area of study and potentially work for them. Mm-hmm. And in the past, it's turned out just to be a fabulous day. So we want women who are currently enrolled at Henry Ford and haven't quite made that decision, women who are wanting to return to school and want more information about what kinds of occupations and careers are realistic choices or possibilities for them, individuals who are looking to make career changes. Now, I encounter a lot of individuals who I've been doing this for X number of years, and I really want to look at doing something differently. So we open our arms and welcome everyone to come and join us.
And I'd even suggest perhaps someone who kind of sort of already knows what career field they're going into, because what you don't know, how does that former defense secretary put it? It can hurt you, but it also can help you. So
absolutely,
it's always good to get more information.
Absolutely.
Maybe you got something you think will work out for you, but you know, if there's the slightest even doubt in your mind, if you don't really have total passion and commitment to the direction you're going, then explore other possibilities. And it's just one morning, all of 5 hours, but they'll treat you well over here, and you've got a lot of people from HFCC who are on top of their fields, we're very well known for all these different areas. Criminal justice, I was wondering about that, though. That's there's a lot of women in the police forces on television, so I'm just wondering if that's one of the... You know, women probably know they could do that, right?
Well, you have to think about criminal justice on a much broader plane. what we see women doing on TV as being police officers,
right.
But there are so many other areas of police work. We have that assurance program that comes through our criminal justice program. And that's really individuals training to work with technology and ferret out crimes, white-collar crimes, that end up coming through technology.
Mm-hmm.
So information assurance. So that's an area. You have women who are not necessarily in the numbers we would like to see them in the CIA, the
mm-hmm.
FBI. Those two are areas that are directly related. And from a state perspective, in terms of defining a program as being eligible for Perkins funding and state approval as a program where women are underrepresented, that still holds true. So we haven't reached a point where women tip the scales and we can say that there are significant enough women in this particular area or field of work to say that it is no longer, a viable area needed.
Mm-hmm. No longer non-traditional.
Absolutely.
Right. What's interesting is last week we had, like you said, the career fair here, and we had people come in from the different I call them vendors, but they were the ones doing the hiring. And this one young lady came in, so sharp, and she worked for the Department of Corrections. She
mm-hmm.
was she worked as first she started as a guard
okay.
at a jail, and there's different, and she said, talk about underrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
And she started in the military, that's how she got her background, and then she went into the Department
military
of Corrections.
Police.
And the state, and that tends to be one of the bigger areas in the state government where
mm-hmm.
you can get a job.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I agree. I think somebody could probably parlay this education for criminal justice into a decent paying job rather quickly.
Absolutely. And also, you look at the side of probation and parole, which has long
right.
been underrepresented in terms of women being in there professionally.
Even on TV.
But then you look at the numbers of women who are being incarcerated
right.
and come back, reentry, and need that support. So it's a viable area for women to look at and consider.
Yeah.
Let me ask another area that's going to be talked about that day, and that is hospitality, hospitality education. We typically think of a lot of women as waitresses, but again, you're talking about exploring the whole area of hospitality education,
mm-hmm.
and
what
you said, it's dominated by men when you get into management areas and so on. So, but there's a lot of opportunities for women in these related areas.
I remember a young woman who was here maybe 3-4 years ago, business degree, working downtown at the Greektown Casino. And
mm-hmm.
she came to Henry Ford to get an associate's degree in culinary arts, hospitality, restaurant management. And I asked her, I said, I'm curious, why are you wanting to do that kind of hookup? She says, well, Mrs. Green, with the hospitality, hotel restaurant management, in combination with my business, the casino is an open area of employment possibilities for me. And she said, and that's what I want. I want to be able to move freely in terms of employment possibilities within that setting. So, we have to think about things on the broad plane as opposed to more narrowly looking at occupations and jobs.
So let's wrap up again. This is the Henry Ford Community College, and we're hosting the Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Careers for Women. It's a workshop, folks. You can come and ask questions and hear a lot of information. It's on Wednesday, November 13th. Registration starts about 7:30 in the morning. If you get there at that time, you'll definitely get a coffee and donut. And about 8 o'clock. Now, they want to emphasize two things. One, any woman, I don't know why a man would attend, but maybe.
This is designed for women.
Yeah, this is designed for women, but okay.
We'll do the men in the spring.
But it's either current students here at HFCC or past students or people who have not even been in college yet
mm-hmm.
who are trying to consider a career direction. And these are things that you wouldn't normally think of. A lot of them are tech-related, but some are not as much. Hear the story directly from the people that know. So it's free. And walk. This is great. This is the final point. Walk-ins are welcome. Okay, so just show up and they can probably accommodate you. They might run out of donuts, though, right?
Yeah, but there's a lunch, too. That's
there's a free lunch. But we would ask that individuals call and that they call 313-845-9617, or you can email Brenda Redinger in our assisted learning services area at B. Redinger, R-E-D-I-N-G-E-R, at hfcc.edu to make reservations.
Cool. This is such a great thing.
Great.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming on the show and sharing it.
I enjoy doing this. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
So 2 weeks from next Wednesday, folks, tell people that haven't made a decision yet, tell those women that this is something to explore at HFCC the morning of November 13th. So thank you very much, Diane Green of the HFCC Counseling Department.
Mark those calendars.
Yep, always something happening, and we want to spread the information around so people can find their new directions. That's kind of a good slogan, isn't it? So we're going to move on with the journal show here right now with that Jim Hightower commentary that didn't want to hold back. So let's take a listen to it, and we'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views in just a moment.
I'm 98% confident we can make a tomato that tastes substantially better, Professor Harry Klee recently exalted to the New York Times. Excuse me, Professor, but substantially better than what? One of Mama Nature's own heirloom varieties, perhaps? No, no. Klee knows that tomato-tampering flavorologists like him can't get near that quality. Rather, he's merely out to endow the industrial, mass-produced fruits of agribusiness with enough tomato-y taste to pass as a minimally acceptable version of the real thing. How? By artificially injecting them with some flavor genes from actual tomatoes. Why? So the corporate powers can retake market share and profits they've been losing to small producers of the natural product. Where did this guy come from? Monsanto, where he was employed for 11 years to help bring dangerously untested and unlabeled bioengineered food to market. Now, at the U of Florida's Institute for Plant Innovation, backed by Monsanto, Klee leads the effort to innovate what's called a chemical recipe for the ideal tomato. That mission raises another question. Ideal for whom? It'll still be a bland, mass-produced tomato doused with pesticides, machine-harvested while green and shipped across country. It's only ideal for the maximization of corporate profits. And beware, for the tomato is not the only target of this academic-industrial complex. Klee and company are also redoing the blueberry to be, as the Times called it, crispy, almost apple-like. Wow, I'll bet that next they'll manufacture apples to be almost blueberry-like. Why are the public's scarce research dollars being frittered away on these corporate projects? This is Jim Hightower saying, Klee claims that it's all about bringing back flavor. But Professor, flavor never left. Go to a farmer's market and taste for yourself.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Wow. Wow, that next commentary just wants to jump right in there, too. Wow, everybody's anxious to get things moving here. And, and of course, we have a lot of stories here to cover today on the show. And we hope you can stick around until 2 o'clock when we're going to start 4 hours of blues music today. Hope you can stay around for that. Always great music that you don't hear on any other station here on WHFR. In this area, you know, that's our format. We try to play the things that others aren't and maybe should be. That's the whole idea. Okay, looking at my list of stories from the Press and Guide and Times Herald from the last couple of weeks, actually not a lot going on. Yes, there's some ins and outs about Dearborn Heights, and we'll look Dennis comment on some of those since he has a day job over there and some nights too. But in Press and Guide last Sunday, that is October the 20th, headline top of the first page story is that, oh my gosh, student enrollment varies across districts. Well, duh, that doesn't seem like very exciting. But in the little box in the center, a factoid, they have a quote from David Mustin of Dearborn Public Schools, and I just think it's significant, even though numbers are up and down in from one district to another nearby. But in Dearborn here, It's the 26th consecutive year, 26 years in a row, that our district has grown in its student population.
That is wild.
Yeah, the increase equates to less than 2%. In most areas here, Detroit, dropper, numbers of population and therefore also students are going down, but not in Dearborn. So I wonder if we're above 100,000 total now. But in any event, that means that our public schools have to do more. And maybe that's a reason to support the millage, maybe not. We'll talk about the millages. Apparently, some of the millages for both Henry Ford Community College and the Dearborn Public Schools are getting more talk than some of the council candidates, which is, clerk candidates too, mayor candidates too, but basically the millages are getting a lot of play in the paper. So anyway, just Dearborn is a growing concern. Oh, here's that story right from last Sunday. Millage dominates discussion. The November 5 election took up much of the time at Dearborn Public Schools board meeting on Monday.
Got it?
I was listening to Democracy Now! Today, right before the show, and Amy Goodman got a coughing fit. I think I caught it from her.
Yeah, that's possible. All right. Well, we were talking about the millage, how you said it dominates the discussion. I'm going to kind of slip that back over to you.
Okay. Yeah, we got some beverage. Oh, well. Superintendent Winston twice reminded those in the audience and who might be watching the meeting at home about the district's $76 million bond, which will appear in the ballot. Trustee Amy Scholes reported the board is sending out requests for proposals for architects and construction managers with plans that firms will be interviewed only a few weeks after the bond is presumably approved. Is that too premature?
No, have to have that in place.
Yeah. These are some things that our board of trustees is unanimous, along with the superintendent, that this is really, really needed. All these maintenance and repairs on buildings that haven't had adequate maintenance and repair for years, it's really essential, they've said. And it says here also, even Henry Ford Community College president, our president, Stan Jensen, was in the audience, and he took the podium for a few minutes to offer information about the colleges, three millages that will be on the ballot. Now, it'll actually just be, I believe, two HFCC proposals. Three mills are up for renewal for 10 years, and that includes a 2.5 and a 0.5 right. That came along. And so it's technically three, but it's like a twofer there.
Right.
The 2.5 and the 0.5 we've already have. And then he's asking for, the college is asking for an additional one mill just for 5 years. Kind of like City of Dearborn and the City of Dearborn Heights, they have a temporary additional millage to make up for the loss from property taxes,
right,
since property has gone down a lot since 2008. And hopefully in 5 years it might come up enough that the millage won't be necessary. But in a way, folks, and I've said this before on the show, it's money. I know nobody likes to put up more money for anything if they don't have to, but it's money that you haven't been paying. All of a sudden, starting in 2008, your taxes have been going down, and that means that the schools and the cities have been hurt significantly, or they've had to postpone the hurt somehow. And so this is, in a way, it's money that that you already said yes to, but the percentages, that's how it's figured, are actually less, and so you've been paying less. But in fact, the dollars stay the same. In fact, you know how inflation is. Every year, things go up in cost a little bit, so those same dollars don't buy as much.
Right.
But they're only asking, and if you look at the details in these things, and I'm not advocating one way or another, I'm just saying this is kind of the facts about these numbers, that additional money, just like it was for the City of Dearborn and the City of Dearborn Heights in the past, and that all of those were approved, is just barely making up for what they've lost over the last 5 years. And there's two differences, and what he pointed out, one is that for the K-12, that's repair and maintenance money. Okay, for HFCC, it's operating money. It's the big enchilada, folks. I mean, it's everything.
Well, I know that they're different in that sense. At the same time, when Mr. Whiston and Mr. Musselman were in here, they said that the repairs, and remember, they gave us like a little, it was about 3 or 4 pages of repairs, you know, concerning all the schools.
Well, it's over 50 schools.
Yeah.
Over 50 buildings that have to be repaired and fixed, and some of them, it's like the roof is leaking like a sieve.
Well, that's I think my point is that these repairs have to be made regardless, so if it doesn't come from this bond, it'll have to come from another place anyway. So in a sense, it is operating, you know what I mean, because the money has to come from somewhere. Let me say right now that the opinions expressed here on the Journal are not necessarily those of anyone at the college.
Although probably President Jensen, who we just quoted, but...
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, when you quote someone, sure.
That's probably the case. Okay, looking still from last Sunday's Press and Guide, and gee, I hope you got a copy of this yourself, and that you do subscribe to the Press and Guide, maybe the Times Herald, too, so you can read all the details. We can't possibly give you all the details here, you know. There was a study session at Dearborn Heights, and maybe it's the time, Dennis... what's been happening over there at Dearborn Heights? You've been actually videotaping a lot of these sessions.
And in between,
there seems to be a lot of disagreements being expressed, a lot of vocal opinions.
Incredible amounts of...
Sometimes getting a little bit excited.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because some, you know, I won't go into the details because a lot of it was borderline personal, because this is an election year, and of course we have a challenger, Janet Badlow, who's still sitting on city council, and she's up against Mayor Dan Pileko.
So in a way, it's kind of like using their positions and those meetings as a campaign forum to score points against some of the other candidates who are right there.
You couldn't be more correct. It's exactly
so how it's like negative campaigning, but I urge
people, it's on TV right now. This last meeting was like that.
What channels in Dearborn Heights?
99 if you have AT&T, 10 if you have Comcast, and 12 if you have WOW.
Okay.
But I will say that Mayor Pileko at one point just said, you know what, I expected this, meaning something that Councilwoman Janet Badlow said about him. He said, I expected this. The last council meeting before the election, of course this is going to happen. And the people in the audience got a little bit riled about that. They didn't like the fact that that he had said that. They were obviously Badlow supporters.
Well, we've had a few tiffs at the Dearborn council meeting, city council, that might be, say, there's political advantage there. But most of those people are running for election again. There's challenger, but the challengers don't attend the regular council meetings. So they could just do business as usual, even though Tefelsky, and I think you covered this last week and the week before, did raise a question about Nancy Hubbard's, was she endorsing certain people? Did other people unfairly use her name? Mm-hmm. Did the city attorney write something for her
exactly.
During her work hours at the city, which wouldn't be ethical? And so that still needs to work itself out. But other than that, they're not using their seat as a political forum as much as Dearborn Heights people seem to be going a little bit wild.
Seemed like they really nip it in the bud in Dearborn, whereas in Dearborn Heights they let them speak, and then after the fact they admonish them. There was an issue, and you probably heard about this, it's still kind of going on, it was in the meeting this past Tuesday, about the community development director, Ron Amon, and his use of a city vehicle.
Right.
And it's still going on.
A car that's leased by the city for his professional use, and also to a certain extent, he takes it home, I guess.
He does take it home, and he does, but he does pay gas, his own gas, when he's taking it home.
Okay.
The point is that Councilwoman Badlow went so far as she went to HUD, who kind of oversees the grant that the community development office uses, and she asked them, is this legitimate?
And I remember we talked about that on the show, or somehow I brought it up, or you brought it up somewhere, and in a way, in fact, I made comment in the margin on the story that I think you didn't necessarily read it out loud, but the comment is, she's now, perhaps because she made that inquiry, going to... HUD may have to retaliate by taking away all the funding that the city was getting.
$380 times 3 years.
It's right that she asked for this clarification about is it legal to do this. But now that HUD knows and said, no, it's not really legal, oh, my God, they might take back more than just that amount of money, too, because now they're made aware of it. Now, whether or not they will act on it is something else, but they were made aware of it. So this is not all positive for Janet Battle. There was a consequence there about letting that funding agency know that something was technically
Absolutely.
Not what they expected. I'm not saying it's illegal what they did, but it's not what they expected and not what they would have approved up front, perhaps.
And that being the case, like you said, they may have to actually come back and say, we want that money back. And Dearborn Heights is not in a position to give money back.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's already been spent.
So those, that's really, other than the election coming up and that particular, you know, Janet Battelow made a, she had said something again, you know, she's running for mayor and she's very vocal anyway. And she made a comment that, not the comment, she spent quite a bit of time on the budget and how the numbers don't jive. The numbers that the city says, this is, look, this is how much money we have, and then the state comes back with an audited version and it's quite a bit less. So that came up, and that's one of those things where we'll hear more about it the next, I'll keep people posted as we
well,
advance that story.
Let's stay with the Dearborn Heights issues here in the Times Herald. Nope, that's Press and Guide from this Wednesday, just 2 days ago, October 23rd. There's a letter to the editor. Now, I think it's, I think we can see through what this person is all about, but it's like the only letter to the editor. And here it is. He believes, and it's a Jerry Nossal, or Nossal, N-O-S-A-L, from Dearborn Heights. He says, or at least the Dearborn Press and Guide have put the title as Residents Getting a Raw Deal from Their City Government, that is, from Dearborn Heights. Mm-hmm. He says, I've lived in the city of Dearborn Heights for 56 years and have seen the decline that the city is going through. The blight, the rat population, the total decline of what was once a beautiful city and a great place to live and raise children. Total decline, is that what you see when you go to work, Dennis?
No, no.
Okay, I mean, you don't live in Dearborn Heights. And,
no, but I spend a lot of time there. I mean, I eat lunch there every day, and I work there.
So, no disrespect, Mr. Nossal, but I'm not sure what you're directly looking at. We know that the rat population is larger than Dearborn's, but there are people trying to deal with that all the time. So, well, going on, some of the employees, this is his main point, though, of the city of Dearborn Heights have had to take a 10% cut in wages for 20% less hours worked. This means that the residents have only 4 days a week to take care of their business needs with the city. And, of course, that's been the case for quite a few years, right? The four-day work week? 2 years?
2 years.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. However, he says, if any employee works beyond 32 hours a week, they're considered to be on overtime. Because of this, the residents of Dearborn Heights were asked to vote to override the Headley Amendment, which amounts to more taxes to be paid by the residents, which they did. Now, I don't see that that is directly connected there.
What do you mean? The city asked for more money by waiving the
Headley override. But they, again, it was a decline in property values.
Sure. But they, what he's saying and what a lot of people say is that the money may have been mismanaged. Nothing illegal, but mismanaged, and therefore there should be more.
Right. Well, his final point about that, whether or not that last paragraph was clear, is that these employees are only working 32 hours a week. He says they're actually getting paid for 36 hours a week. Just wait here. They get paid for their lunch hours.
Yeah.
You get paid for your lunch hour, Dennis?
I do.
Okay. Why?
Because I eat at my desk.
That's it, exactly.
You're exactly
right. You know, most teachers get paid for their lunch hours. I mean, it's not an hourly thing with teachers,
right.
You know, if you're on salary.
Sure.
But I know my daughter, always mentioning my daughter in Southfield Public Schools, their latest plan, which I think they backed off now of the Southfield administration, is to subtract money from the teacher's salary for that hour of lunchtime. Well, what does that mean? Well, the teachers are not going to stay around the school.
No,
they're not going to eat their lunch if they're not paid to be there. And they've been using that hour to supervise kids in lunchrooms and so on. If they're not paid to be there, in fact, if they're not even legal to be there, they better not be. That's what their union told them, too. Because what if they try to adjudicate some dispute and get into trouble?
Right.
Well, they're not employed, technically, at that time.
Right.
You know, they have no authority or legal status. So they better not get in trouble if they're not being paid to be there. And then the school district excuse me, did realize, oh, my God, we'll have to bring on more people, hire more people in to somebody's got to watch over the kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, during that time. And so I think that's probably the situation, not just for your situation, Dennis, but that a lot of these people, there's not that much time for lunch. They eat in the office. They eat at their desk. They can still answer the phone. Maybe they do. They can still do a little work. Maybe they do. But, if it's only open 4 days a week, I think they should be around, even if they're eating lunch, and maybe handles crisis, emergency, special need that comes up. And so I think, all due respect, Mr. Nosal, I think a lot of jobs, you need to pay the people for that lunch period. Why? Because they're still there and they're still doing their job or may need to do their job at that time.
Well, there's one thing I'll point out that he's in error, and that's that he says that the people work 32 hours a week. That's the max, and that's not true. The max now is 28 hours. Mm. And if you're open, do the math. If you're open 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday, 28 divided by 4 is only 7 hours a day, so they're not getting paid for their lunch.
Oh, okay.
If you so do they're that. Not. So he's okay. mistaken in a couple areas there. But yeah, the max is 28 hours for, because the only full-time people are the department heads and some vital, you know, key people, and they're okay. all salaried.
So this has been Dennis Reimar's letter to the editor responding to Jerry Nosal.
There you go.
So if you get in trouble, Dennis, you know.
Well, I won't. I mean, it's a fact.
No,
28
no,
hours.
No, it's a fact. And so he's criticizing city government because, in effect, they're paying people for not working, and they're giving them, in effect, a pay increase when other people people in the city, paying their taxes, don't think that's a good idea. Well, I think you have to look at the bigger picture here, as we tried to do. That's what we do in the Journal sometime, read between the lines, so no disrespect there.
Oh, not at all. And okay. He's right. I mean, people do complain about the rats. People do complain about certain things, and it's, yep. I really don't know what you do about something like that, you know? Hmm. I mean, take care of there are two answers to that. You take care of properties better, so the residents have to do their part, and then if they don't, there has to be a more strict enforcement of the ordinances.
Yeah.
And you need money for that. So
let's hear Jim Hightower's second commentary for this show. The first one was about tomatoes, and this is about wackos. Okay, you ready for this? Okay, here it goes.
I haven't heard such enthusiastic, downright raucous applause since Texas Governor Oops Perry suggested in 2009 that his state just might withdraw from the Union. Unfortunately for him, the applauders were not Texans, but the people of the other 49 states. This year, though, Idaho is the recipient of hip hip hoorays from across the country. Why? Because it has been selected as the site of an extraordinary new town to be named Three Citadel. This will be a walled, heavily fortified, one-square-mile settlement of some 7,000 armed and angry, ideologically pure, anti-government extremists drawn from cities, towns, and gopher holes all across America. Lucky you, Idaho! Founder and apocalyptic visionary Christian Alan Carradine says the Roman numeral 3 in the name of his citadel scheme represents what he calls the 3%ers, the percentage of Americans who are super patriots, survivalists, capable of withstanding the coming economic doomsday and social upheaval. He says that once established, he and his fellow Citadelians will take it upon themselves to restore America to Americans. The Southwest will be purged of Latinos, he explains, and enclaves of Muslims, such as in Detroit, will be culled by fed-up Americans looking for some payback. In Carradine's barricaded utopia, everyone older than 13, quote, must possess an AR-15 assault rifle, 5 magazines, and 1,000 rounds of ammunition. In an odd comparison, he declares that his last bastion of liberty will be like Disneyland, a walled, gated private property. Yeah, only goofier. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, the 3 in the Citadel's name could also refer to Carradine's 3 felony convictions. Nonetheless, if he can actually bring 7,000 like-minded zealots into his compound, we can sneak up and lock the gates from the outside.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
And we're back with more of the new WHFR Journal, October 25th, 2013. Okay. There's several good stories in the paper that you should look at. I'll just mention these. You should go and read it. In last Sunday's Press and Guide, editorial opinion by Glenn Gilbert, who's a great columnist, and he talks about how can the state of Michigan meet its renewable energy goal? Apparently, we're not. You know, there was some bill passed.
It didn't pass.
25 by 25, it didn't pass.
No.
But we have a lesser goal, I know, and we're not even getting.
It was like 15 by 2015, right?
Well, maybe, yeah. Yeah.
Something like that.
Dearborn Times Herald says that the Dearborn Historical Museum's party, their first official fundraising event, it was that beer tasting thing a couple weeks ago.
It
was a big success. I didn't see the actual numbers, but they said they were expecting like 400 or 500, and they ordered for 800, and it pretty much everybody
good.
Showed up. So, so more parties, more fundraising. That's all good, I guess.
We talked about that. It seemed like a good idea. It's, you know, they're doing it to raise money for the schools out in South Lyon, where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually having a beer and wine tasting
associated
with, obviously not for the kids, but there's a model there that might be working, so we might see more of that.
Well, I just wonder how they're getting the license for the serving of those things, or maybe because they're bringing restaurants in, the restaurants already have the license.
That's probably the case.
Yeah. So, okay. Right. Oh, one of those issues, I'm sorry, I missed this. You didn't, any comment about the City of Dearborn website? There's a whole story in
Dearborn
Times
Heights,
Herald,
right?
Dearborn Heights, about, I think Janet Battelow said we got to update the website.
And everybody, and nobody knew about it. That's the thing, is she brought it up, and then if you look at the responses, some people are like, well, we have to see what it's like. I mean, we have to see how easy it would be to fix it, and, because it's not terribly user-friendly. And when you compare it now to Dearborn's, because Dearborn just revamped theirs. You've been on that site, I'm sure, right?
Yep.
Don't you think that that was a definite upgrade?
Yeah.
I did too. And I
Absolutely.
Think people are making that comparison now, and Dearborn Heights is, kind of lost in there.
Yeah, the thing that got me, and I've in hosting the Dearborn Heights News and Views Tuesday Forum once a month, usually on the second Tuesday for a while, I usually make comments to the different department heads that we have in about, well, you know, this information hasn't been updated for 6 months. Is there anything new happening over there?
No.
You know, so they don't necessarily need a complete redesign, but in order to be helpful to those people in Dearborn Heights that want to keep track of what's going on in the city, they at least have to have somebody who's updating it, let's say, on a weekly basis.
Oh, at least weekly.
You know, like what happened to the city council? Well, the last time I checked, the minutes of the city council of Dearborn Heights, it was like 4 months back.
Right, right.
It's like nothing happened there for 4 months.
No.
So,
I mean, to be fair, all of those things are available. If somebody would go to City Hall and would want something like that, they would probably, they'd probably direct them to me, and I would make a copy of the DVD of the meeting.
But only 4 days a week.
Yeah. Right. You know what's funny, though? I mean, you know, I went into work this morning. So, you know, it is what it is. You do what you have to do to get it done.
Yeah. Sometimes that's true if you're really I'm dedicated to doing the job right.
Oh, and go overboard. I just don't want to yell there.
No, any union that I know of says don't go overboard. you need to be paid if you're doing good work. That's a basic principle, and I think it's very important. Okay, we may come back to this if we have time, but the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, and, you know, I've criticized them before, and, of course, the Times-Herald almost always puts, at least one of their weekly editorials, there's actually two or three they distribute every week, in their paper and as a editorial opinion. And they are a conservative think tank, so I can predict on whatever topic exactly what they're thinking.
Right.
You know, it doesn't take any research. I can predict it because I know what the party line is.
Right.
And I don't mean Republican Party. I just mean conservative line. But a very good article this time about the problem of funding college education. And that is a problem.
Sure.
I know locally, Henry Ford Community College is like the second cheapest game in the state in terms of getting a college education. Certainly we're saving the state and the local taxpayers a lot of money by doing it the way we're doing it and yet keeping standards up. But, this is something for you to read and study, and maybe I'll get back to it. College subsidies are a growing problem. Yeah, right. And the tuition that students have to pay to even get in anywhere other than Henry Ford Community College is really awful. And the debts that they're saddled with for the rest of their lives, practically,
it seems like
is wrong. It's like killing their whole future lives. It's like putting them in a debtor's prison for the rest of their life, you know, that it's almost impossible to get out. Important topic. So see if you can read that editorial opinion from Mackinac Center, whatever you... Okay. Dearborn Press and Guide from this week points out... Okay, there's a little story. Dearborn City Clerk candidates state their case for voters. So in Dearborn, of course, there's only two. Can you name either one of them, Dennis?
Buddha and...
There you go. I knew it.
There's somebody else. I mean, I don't know the challenge.
Sure there is. Okay. Hang on. Just got to get the right paper here. I was going to just quote it for you, but I've lost the paper. Help. Where is it?
I don't know.
Okay. It's buried here. There we go.
Got it?
Yeah.
All right.
Of course, Kathy Buda. Everybody knows Kathy Buda. She's been in office several times now. And so she's the incumbent. It's her fifth four-year term.
Wow.
Her opponent is Khalil Dakhala.
Okay.
Dakhala. Okay. And so here's the story on him, since he's the challenger. He feels that while the city clerk's office has a good reputation, it can do better. And he says that's why he's running. He's running for a four-year term against Kathy Buda. And he says, I have something new to give to that office, most importantly, bringing it up to the 21st century like other cities. Is that like Dearborn Heights?
Well, Dearborn Heights uses Dearborn's IT, so okay. They share that.
Okay. Among the things, so he's criticizing their IT then.
Kind of, yeah.
Among the things he said needs improving in the office, number one, election day lines at the polls are too long because of what he calls operational inefficiencies.
Hmm.
Of course, I live in a relatively small precinct. I just walk in and they throw the piece of paper in my
Same
face
here.
After I make my signature. So it's, I don't know what time he votes.
Right. I went to Tenike and I had no problem.
Now, in a high population precinct, I'm not sure, but precinct lines have been redrawn recently. So it's possible that more people live in some precincts than others. And therefore, unless they put the extra staff in there or more machines, the lines would be there, and they'd be longer. So I don't have any personal experience about long lines. Then he says he feels that the clerk's office should be able to offer more services online, particularly issuing permits that will better serve residents and will save the city money, especially because its budget is tight. He doesn't give example. Does the city clerk in Dearborn Heights do permits?
Yes.
What kind of permits?
Well, like licenses, like dog licenses and things like that. Okay. Are you talking about for things like...
Anything out of the city clerk's office. I haven't researched that. But.
No, that's interesting.
Okay.
Because I know there are other departments where you'd go for, say, a building permit and things like that.
Okay. Also, he says the office of city clerk in Dearborn needs to better reflect the city's diversity. He says that he personally speaks fluent Arabic.
Okay.
And if he's elected, he can help translate when needed. He says it's not diverse yet. With the diverse community we have, it needs to be more diverse. Okay, how many people need to speak Arabic in that office? I hate to point this out, and no disrespect, and I'm all for diversity, but I thought English was the only approved legal language in this country. Maybe it hasn't been approved, though. It just happens to be de facto the language you do business with here. So it behooves everyone that can't speak English to try to learn to speak English.
Sure.
And that's no disrespect to Arabic culture.
Not at all. That's just...
I would actually recommend the people that can't speak Arabic in Dearborn, take some classes.
Sure.
You know, let's get bilingual for the good of the community.
When a full third of your city is Arabic, that would definitely...
I'm just saying that's a point he's making, and I just have a little twist or turn there. So I guess if he was elected city clerk, he will run right out to the front desk whenever needed to translate. So good for him. he says he wants to modernize the office's operations. Doesn't say what that is.
Yeah, that's kind of
obviously. If they move to a new building, there's a chance to modernize because they're going to take some things with them, but they'll obviously have a different workflow, and so things are going to, I think, be improved no matter who becomes city clerk in the new building. It's bound to make some changes.
Oh, absolutely.
That they've been putting off.
So he's not necessarily, because he talked about the IT in a different part of his editorial.
Right. Doesn't give more details.
What is modernizing, though? I mean, is that is there a new model you and I aren't aware of?
I don't know.
I thought there'd be cubicles. Yeah. And
well, something, if you get a chance to see him somewhere or some form around town, Mr. Dakhala, you should ask him.
Absolutely.
His main job right now is the student services liaison at Edsel Ford High School.
Okay.
Which, of course, a school that's in some trouble with the state.
It's a priority school.
Yeah, it's priority school because it wasn't doing too well on its priorities. According to the state of Michigan, although the people, again, at Edsel Ford said they only missed by a few points. He's the go-between over there between the administration, teachers, staff, parents, and students.
Wow.
Wow. That's a lot of people he's got to be between.
And that's probably why he speaks the language fluently.
Well, of course, he'd have to be a polyglot in that situation.
Ooh, good word.
Perhaps. He's often called upon to translate items being sent home to parents, and he helps facilitate communication between parents and the school.
Okay. Do you think that would make him a good clerk? That's hard to see. Realize how that translates.
Well, if we have a lot of disputes at the clerk's office, and if he can resolve disputes, I think that's always good. He's also been in charge of the city's Levagood Park and Dunworth Pool for 14 years.
Wow.
That's a summer thing. And has worked weekends with the 19th District Court Work Program for 12 years. He was also a reserve police officer in the city for 5 years. So that's his experience, and he thinks that that would help him. Although for a clerk, I would... What do I know? I would think you'd want some accounting or economics education. But you're a manager, exactly. So you hire other people to do that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like a clerk in Dearborn Heights, Walter Brashevitz, he's so hands-on. He really is. I mean, mm-hmm. He takes part in everything. And the big part of it, obviously, a big, huge part of it is the election because, you know, a lot goes into that, and they've been planning this for a while. And he supervises that. He's always looking for this. I want to say that right now. If you have time on the day, I'm sure Dearborn could use volunteers as well. Dearborn Heights Clerk's Office mm-hmm. is definitely looking for people to help with the election.
Right. And he does say, final point here, that he's been watching city council meetings. So he knows the issues and the clerk's role in the meetings. Mm. If elected, he said a goal would be to get more people to vote. He said he would hold community outreach events and town hall meetings, especially in the high schools, to encourage the younger generation to get involved. I'm not sure the city clerk has ever done that in Dearborn.
Dearborn Heights, they definitely have.
Really?
That's a okay. big part of it. We every year we actually do a segment with the clerk to talk about the voting process and getting out there.
I would assume they would hold as many, they must try to get people to register to vote other than at their own office. I mean, you can always go to the city clerk's office to register to vote, but in Dearborn...
Well, they're here on campus.
Right, but I think we initiated that at HFCC, worked with the city clerk's office in Dearborn as well as many other local area
True.
City clerks to do that. I don't think that was initiated by Kathy Buda's office.
No.
But obviously she would totally approve and support it if they didn't have to provide the staff. Because it takes staff. It takes money these outreach programs. And that's always an issue in a tight budget year. So we're just trying to give Kathy Buda makes a case there. And, of course, you should know her well from... her years in office already, so
like 20.
Read and study and see who you prefer there. Mr. Dakala does make several points that maybe you agree with, and you'd want to support him then. Of course, you need to go out and vote in order to support him. Yes? Okay. All right. Check another one off. All right. Couple small issues. One is kind of current here. Winter enrollment at HFCC. It's starting up on October 28th.
That is crazy.
That's the date.
Yeah.
Winter is, of course, begins in January. And here's another newspaper I can't find. Out of practice. All these newspapers look alike.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem.
You
know?
You missed a couple shows. There you go.
Yeah. Let's see. Right here. Here it is.
That's maybe. Funny.
Page 11A. Yes. All right.
Got it?
Yeah. HFCC hosts test anxiety seminar in October and November.
They have that pretty regularly, too. It's like hypnosis or something, isn't it? They get you to meditate. And
yeah, here it is, right on the bottom. Okay. Yeah, and I think actually starting yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, you can actually go online and look for classes. Okay, you can actually see what's available at what times. You just can't register until the 28th, which is next Monday.
Right.
And then, of course, you do have to be admitted already before you can register online. And admission is usually, and I think that it has to be, you have to come in person in order to be admitted to the college. It doesn't take longer than an hour or so to go to the admissions office here on campus, the main campus, to get enrolled. But if you want to look at the classes, I think you can do that already and see what choices are out there. You should not wait until the last minute. And when do classes start in January? Okay, I've got that here.
Oh, do you? I was going to say, usually it's around like January 10th.
Yes.
9th.
Yes. Classes begin Monday, January 13th.
Okay.
Okay.
Oops. Okay.
Yep. So consider coming into HFCC.
Do they still print the catalog of classes? Do we still have that? And I wonder when that goes out.
That's a big expense. No, they don't usually do that too much. Okay. Even if you come on campus, they will just direct you to a computer terminal.
Sure, sure. That's the Welcome Center.
Welcome Center, computer terminal. And if you don't know how to operate the computer, they'll show you. But it's all there electronically
right there, you're right.
For you to look at and reference right there. And, of course, you have people you could talk to if you're desperate about that. All righty. Another thing about HFCC here, and this is from Patch.com, and often Patch gets the stories before it gets in the papers because they are a daily sort of thing. We do want to congratulate the editor from the last several months, Daniel Lai, L-A-I, who has been their editor, and he's now moving on. He just announced yesterday that he has a new job as a public relations director for Access.
Huge.
And he's very excited about that. And he and his wife, in fact, are going to be moving into Dearborn and buying a house here. So he plans to stay for a while, and certainly he's been a good local editor for Patch. He had also worked with Patch in Dexter and Chelsea, Michigan, been in Dearborn assisting for 3 years, and he says he'll miss it.
He did a great job. So yep, congratulations, so Daniel.
There's a job that's open.
yeah.
But it's a everyday grind and that going to a lot of meetings.
Sure, so. Sure. He does. If you look at the byline on most of the stories, they say Daniel Lai.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I was going to talk about another HFCC announcement here. The college is going to offer, and not right away, but beginning in fall 2014,
okay,
next year, all active classes at HFCC will not be canceled due to low enrollment. Now, of course, the fudge factor is what is an active class.
Right.
How active does it have to be? Is it jumping up and down on the electronic page or doing somersaults? First of all, I know that they're backing off on offering a lot of classes optimistically, that they're only going to offer maybe, I don't know, two-thirds,
right,
three-quarters of what they offered before. But if they need more, they're going to make a decision like 2 weeks or so before the semester starts, and then they will get more sections in there. And again, electronically, you'll see them because they'll appear instantly, and you have more choices. So before everything gets closed and shuttered, and you can't get into a popular class or a class you want to get into, they should be ready to open a few more. So, but that's a very important thing. It means that every active class, and we'll define that again, offered by the college, will run, even with low enrollment, and normally they'd want 50 to 70%, depending on the class,
right,
of students in there. So if the maximum is like 24, then they'd want, say, 12 to 14, or maybe 15,
minimum,
or that they would cancel,
sure,
it. And a lot of students are wary of that, and they know, oh, that's only got 8 students, so I don't want to take that. Kind of proud of our tradition here of, because we started it first at WHFR, our staff training class, TCM 189. If one person is in there, we do it, you know.
And sometimes one person.
We're desperate for volunteers. Okay,
go.
That's a simple fact. But we do it. So we've always had.
I guarantee.
No class will be canceled, even if there's only one person in it.
Right.
But I think it's a great thing for students to know that, because then they won't, is this an active class? However that's defined. Yes, okay, then I'll take it, even though there's only 6 people there, because I know, more people may come in, but I know it's going to stay there.
Right.
So that's I think, a very good deal. And as I said, it's a paradigm shift here for the college, and I won't explain what a paradigm is, but it's not 20 cents.
It's a model.
It's not 20 cents.
Right.
It's paradigms. Okay, just for the radio audience.
Ba-dum-bum.
Okay. But some other schools do it that way, and so we're going to phase it in with the phase of the moon. No, for the winter 2014, spring 2014, and summer 2014 semesters, no active section will be canceled after 1 week before the semester begins.
What?
No.
Oh, that means 2 weeks they can cancel it.
Yeah, it's
within 7 days.
No,
they won't.
Oh, that's the phase-in period.
Okay.
So they're going to give it an extra week to get up to the minimum.
Gotcha.
But by fall next year, fall 2014, if it's active before it starts and you're in there, you got it.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. So it's going to take a while to get people used to this.
All right.
I do always recommend don't wait until, oh, well, nobody ever attends the first week of class, and I can make it up, and so I'll just sort of wander in the second week. You can't do that anymore, folks. There's new policies we started 2 years ago that if you're not there in the first day or two of the class session, they won't let you get in.
What's that called?
Well, it's
absent.
Nobody can enroll late.
Right.
Now, you could do add drop week. So if you enrolled in one thing and wanted to go to another section or another class, you could do that during the first week. But if you're not here, enrolled in something, you can't just slide in after the class starts.
Right.
You know, and you've got to be there the first couple of days because there's another policy that affects that. I can't remember the name, but it has to do with federal government funding, too.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're very concerned about, you know, You've read the papers about students signing up to get like
it's almost fraudulent the way
grant money or something,
sure.
And then they don't go to class
at all.
Yeah, so this has nothing to do with that, but it's called a no class cancellation guarantee, and that's HFCC. Well, we're coming to the end of the show.
We got to talk about tomorrow.
Yeah,
the record show.
Yes,
it's
talk
a huge event here, one of our biggest, and it's tomorrow. I have it right here in front of me. See, I almost forgot about it this year because I've been so busy. Tomorrow, October 26th, it is right here on campus. It starts at 9 a.m. It's 9 to 10, actually, is the early admission, and it's $5. 10 to 4 is the general admission.
10 to 5.
I'm sorry, 10 to 5. No, it says 10 to 4 here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. And the general admission at that point is the sliding scale of $1 to $5. So regardless, I mean, all the money goes to the station. We're a commercial-free station.
All kinds of used CDs, other music, memorabilia. It's a big party. Try to get over here and stake your claim to some bits of history.
Yeah, go to whfr.fm/recordshow. It's got all the information. Yeah. Probably has a map there.
So coming up right now is going to be a blues show with Big Bill.
Absolutely.
Big Bill is here. Oh, boy. So we're going to get on to that. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. Final point, though, absentee ballots are available at the city clerk's office through November 2nd. You know, the election is the 5th, and they're even open on that last Saturday. That's the 2nd, okay, before the 5th.
Right.
And I think this is probably true in other city clerk's offices, too. Remember, for that absentee ballot, yeah, if you could call them and they can send the form in the mail, but then you got to send the form back and then they have to send the ballot. So right now it's probably too late for that. But you can go into the city clerk's office and what you can do is say, I want an absentee ballot, show your ID. And they will give it to you and you can actually fill it out at that moment and hand it right back to them. Okay? So don't wait. I mean, what if you have to be out of town? What if you get sick? What if your car doesn't work that day? You know, Take and use absentee ballots as soon as you know what you're doing with your choices. I think that's extremely important, and please be part of the system. Otherwise, you're part of the problem.
It's an easy way to do it. Exactly. All right.
Okay, thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. This is WHFR Dearborn, and I think we're going to conclude with an old theme I found for the journal. Maybe people remember this, and take care out there. Oh, hey, guess what? iTunes says it can't find it. Okay, that's how old it is. Okay, no problem. Bye-bye.